You're listening to the DanielJMcKeown.com podcast.
So you got an iPad too?
I did, and I absolutely love it.
You know, I'm glad. You know, it does seem like a really cool little computer, and it's really cool that the GarageBand app for it is definitely really awesome. Although I'm still basically a desktop GarageBand user, I love some of the stuff that they've made on the. On the GarageBand, do you see yourself? Do you think when we record your solo album, are we going to record it on that, or do we want to do it on the desktop version? Or I guess we could do both because we could transfer it.
Let's do both. Yeah, it's a lot of fun making songs on here, and it just unleashes the creative process and really uses the touch interface well. I think more and more apps will probably do that. The Twitter app for the iPad is pretty awesome, as is Flipboard. They really get and understand the medium. So it's fun to engage in a new way with media, with the iPad too. Or I guess just iPad now.
Yeah, but it is notable that you have the two, because I remember when you tried the one, you noticed it was a little heavy. And now this one is a nice kind of size and weight. They really polished it just a little bit, but in a nice way, didn't they, with the new version?
They did.
Well, I mean, I definitely think, in the short time you've had it, you've definitely done a lot with it already, so it's pretty exciting. I'm glad you recommended a couple apps now, because, you know, that leads us right into apps I wanted to talk about. That remember we were looking at Reader, R-E-E-D-E-R, the RSS Reader app that syncs with Google Reader.
Yeah, I really like it. I haven't used it much. I've just seen you use it, but it looks like a great interface. And I think we were talking about the idea that it's great that Google allows other companies to take their content and put it in a visually pleasing format, because I think that Google is the Craigslist of the internet.
Oh, that's pretty harsh, especially because Craigslist is on the internet also.
Blue links, Times New Roman font, it's just so basic, and it's actually a little drab. You know, you have a lot of fun plugins for your Gmail. I think you have like a space background.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah,
I think email is actually still a really important part, as is RSS. You know, I think RSS is sort of like, it's not email particularly, but you know, you're choosing the content you want, and you're getting it delivered to you. So you should have an option to really make it look good and nice, and I think this app does that.
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. It's on the Mac App Store. It's fairly reasonably priced, but it's a few dollars. There's an app that last I checked, I think was free. It's actually really cool, called another Mac OS X app called Virtual DJ Home, and it's the basic version of this DJ app, but it's really cool. It lets you load songs up on your Mac and play one on each side. It has the kind of virtual spinning disc metaphor that different turntable apps. Remember, I used to use OTS turntables on the Windows XP. Oh, back when I used Windows. I mean, but that was a pretty cool app for it. But this is a cool. This is really pretty good, and free download, so definitely worth checking out. There's a, you know, you can grab the disc and scratch it and play, kind of like sync the songs, like lock the songs together and stuff. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, I looked at the apps for the iPad and I downloaded one called Bakery Story, and you have a little bakery and you can make drinks and cakes and croissants and all that kind of stuff. It's, you know, Japanimation, little people walk into your cafe and, you know, coins and stars and, you know, all that kind of, you know, very juvenile sort of gameplay, if you will. But it's so addictive because I want my store to do well. And one of the things is, you know, if you want to make coffee or something, everything has a time limit. So you have to make sure that you always have coffee and brownies out, because brownies only take a minute to make. So you always want to make sure you have something that people come in. And then, you know, as you gain more money, you set up other stations and you can bake things that take a day or 4 or 5 hours, because I don't have time to sit around for 4 hours and wait for my my stuff to be done. And also, if you wait too long, everything goes bad. So it's, I think there's a lot of games like this probably on Facebook and social gaming, and I haven't really gotten into them, but I did with this one, and I sorely regret it, and I think I might delete the app because it's really pointless and it's highly addictive for no good reason. I get no value out of it. I just feel frustrated.
That's a really interesting, saga. It just shows that, those games can be oddly compelling, but I guess in a way that at the after you've played them for a while, maybe you've just, you know, had enough of them. But that's, yeah, I think that's an interesting story. Well, there's a couple apps. I always have a lot of iPhone apps, but I only have two this time. Now, these are apps that are very different. One is a video camera app. Now, you know that I often talk about phone replacement apps. I really like ProCamera. I occasionally use Camera Genius, although I have kind of a love-hate relationship with it, And I've used Camera Plus or Camera Plus Sign, as I sometimes call it, to make it clear like which one I'm talking about. That one's pretty good. It's really popular. I think it's solid. There's Hipstamatic, but you know, video camera apps. I mean, I've mentioned maybe one or two, but you know, the 8mm trend was the big thing, mm-hmm. And a lot of people are using the 8mm. There's also one called Super 8 that's connected with the movie that was out recently.
Which, as a side note, I think is a brilliant integration of marketing. You know, here is a movie about Super 8, the film. Actually, I don't even know what the movie is about, but I'm assuming it's maybe shot in that film.
There might be some of it. I don't know. I think it's a, you know... I'm not sure. I think I saw part of a preview, but I couldn't figure out what it was about.
But I think there's something related to the film and the camera. And then to, you know, pick a device that is so popular and to create an app for it that users can actually use beyond the promotion, beyond the movie.
Yeah.
I think is a really smart idea. And, you know, as marketers, you want to look for promotions that make sense. Like, if Jim Carrey's new movie about the penguins or something was to make an app and, oh, let's play with the silly penguins and dress them up, that might only get you so far, you know? So don't just create app noise. You know, I think there's a lot of that these days, and I think people need to really make good, solid, useful apps, you know?
That one I think has had some people download it and use it, and maybe that's got them thinking about the movie. There's also iSuper 8, and so yeah, there's at least three out there that do that type of 8mm style video. But there's a new one out there that I wanted to mention called Flare. I don't know why it's called Flare. It's sort of a strange name. But what it does is it tries to, at least, it tries to be a HDR video app. Now, I think you've seen a couple shots I've taken with that, right? They're kind of psychedelic. Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting. Now, it seems to take fairly small video, and I'll say it plays in a QuickTime player, but it doesn't, Aperture doesn't like it. But it's not really a big deal. Aperture doesn't like the video from our Sony camera either. So, you know, Aperture's a little picky. So I think there's just one other iOS app. It's the Dropbox app. Now, I've been talking to you about Dropbox a little bit lately. I've been starting to use it. I know it's gotten really popular. You know, it has some detractors, but it's not worth getting into the whole story now. Like I'm using it right now. It basically allows you to have a folder on your desktop of your computer that's synced with any other computer you have. So if you drop a file in there, it'll be in the equivalent folder on another computer. Now, you can get a Dropbox app for your iPhone, and you can basically view your files. So if you drag a photo into your Dropbox folder on your desktop, it will also be on your iPhone. But it's actually, because of that, you can go the other way. You can upload from your iOS device to to Dropbox, and then you can get it on your desktop. That basically offers wireless syncing for photos.
Yeah.
So that's kind of useful because, obviously, normally you're plugging your iPhone in to sync photos, at least for now, until everybody's using iOS 5. Well, this is the DanielJMcKeown.com podcast for June 28th, 2011. Find our site at DJMcloud.com. And, I actually am, moving a lot of my posting over to, the new blog on DanielJMcKeown.com at DJMblog.DanielJMcKeown.com. But I still have the Posterous site, too. You know what? I think there's something that you have to remember that Governor Rick Perry reminded us.
And you can always follow me on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter. Twitter.
So you can follow me, Daniel J. McKeown, at twitter.com/PacificPelican. And you can follow Jessica at twitter.com/JessicaMcKeown. Well, I wanted to mention really quick that Bitly allows custom domains, because that's really a cool thing. I've been using it, like y.djmcloud.com. Now you can have your own domain, but you can have Bitly do your URL redirecting for you, right? That's really a neat thing. It's a neat thing to offer because they offer, it free if you just send a CNAME record to your subdomain, so it's pretty straightforward. I guess, I wanted to pick, what's really annoying on podcasts is, they break podcasts up, there's a whole boring 25 minutes yet where people have to have a pick. Have you ever heard of podcasts like that? My pick of the week? Oh, it's terrible. So, I don't want to mention names, but I've been telling you how disappointed I've been in this week in Google Podcasts, mainly because, a lot of reasons, but Jeff Jarvis has been missing, and that show, of course, is terrible then, but they have this whole, they ruin the last 30 minutes by, you have to have a pick or a number or something, so it's this really terrible format. But Sam, having said that, a lot of the shit on this show is stuff that I've, picked. Oh, I was gonna, I was gonna be clean, I thought we were gonna go clean on this podcast, I just thought, because I didn't think I was gonna swear, but then it just comes out. But I do have a musical pick. You should check out the Dead Pod. It's a Grateful Dead podcast. And it had this one recently. Grateful Dead 1994 at the Richfield Coliseum in Ohio. Now, there's two reasons I find that very interesting. One is I was at the Sunday Soldier Field concert in summer 1995, the last Grateful Dead show ever. And I think it's really neat that it's of course, you know, going to be a similar sound compared to, say, the 70s version, you know, of the band, to what I heard. And it's a good set. It was on a recent podcast of the Dead Pod, and all Ridgefield Coliseum, of course, being where the Cleveland Cavaliers played until a few years ago, being down south of Cleveland. So they're in Ohio, they're playing. It's a year before I actually saw them in person. So I just think that's, like, you know, that's really cool. You know, it's a good set. I guess it doesn't stack up to, you know, some classic old school stuff in some ways, but it's still very enjoyable. We were talking a little bit about Bitcoins earlier, but that's not even really interesting, is it? But the Electronic Frontier Foundation isn't taking them anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I guess it's a really neat idea to have a decentralized peer-to-peer currency, but it really just seems to be drawing a lot of crazy geeks and cryptography nerds, and they think they're going to build a new currency. It's probably, like a lot of things, it probably eventually collapses, but I don't know. You know, I'm not really sure. Definitely wouldn't put any of my assets in Bitcoins. But I did expend some of my assets for getting LA Noire. Actually, you picked that up, didn't you? But we've been playing that. So we've been playing that on the PS3. What do you think of LA Noire?
I love it. I think it's really a cool, neat game, and I love the interrogation feature. It's pretty linear, though. I mean, really wants you to stay on track.
It's the most linear game of this kind of rock star genre that I can remember playing. It's definitely very cool, but it's much more linear. And for me, I like LA Noire a lot. And the cars and the map, it's all very cool. But like you said, they kind of push you in a lot of directions and toward a lot of tasks, and less away from the kind of wandering around and looking for trouble and occasionally even finding little side missions and random things like you would in a lot of GTA, like GTA 4 or Red Dead Redemption. And it's really tough to follow Red Dead Redemption. That is, like, absolutely one of my favorite games ever, and it's like I wonder how much further I get through LA Noire, because we've gone a long way through it, a third, maybe even more, and in a pretty short time. And we, you know, I guess we'll probably keep playing it. Maybe we'll play that together, and if I'm playing, I'll play Red Dead more, because I haven't gone back to it quite yet, but I'm starting to think about it. I love my horses and my stagecoaches and all that stuff. That game is so awesome. And LA Noire is very fun. It's very cool. But you're right, it's basically like a good linear game.
Yeah.
It's not like an amazing wander around world with a mission here and there, like a GTA 4 to some extent, and Red Dead Redemption to a great degree. Like, you know, I just that game to me just is so excellent that, you know, I know they're going to want to go in a different direction after that, and so they did. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they come up with next.
Yeah. Now, I'm looking in the App Store, and I'm looking at the free apps, and there's an HBO Go app.
Yeah.
Which is such a great idea, right?
Okay.
But you have to subscribe to HBO.
Sure.
And I just feel like HBO at one time was like the hot ticket, and a reason why most people subscribed to cable, right, was they got cable and then you had to get HBO. Like, you couldn't just get HBO, right? You had to go cable and then get the advanced package, right?
Yeah, it sounds like that's how it works, right?
So, in this day of Hulu and Netflix, HBO's got this great original content, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Deadwood, Eastbound and Down, and you can't get access to it. You can't buy the shows. And it's like the biggest joke about HBO is here's a movie that nobody wants to watch, and it's going to be on 45 times this month.
Yes.
So yeah. it just astonishes me that companies are making iPad apps, but they're not really thinking about what the consumer wants, and they're not thinking about the value of their content.
Well, yeah, and I think HBO is very constrained by their old media ways, basically what you outlined. You know, they have their system. This is what they see this as just another benefit to subscribers, apparently. They don't see this as an independent revenue driver, which obviously it would make sense. You would think that doesn't Time Warner own them? They would think they would pull out some of that content and make it something that they marketed through different channels. But HBO has like that long running reputation, right? That I guess it's gotten itself into a situation where they don't want to change their model.
Yeah. And then here, the first comment says, it doesn't work with Time Warner. Time Warner owns HBO. Again, are you kidding me?
Oh, it doesn't work with Time Warner Cable?
No.
Well, that's very strange. And I could be... I thought I was current about who owned HBO. I'm pretty sure I am, right? But I could be wrong. But yeah, I think that's very strange. And there, I don't know if it's a... Yeah, I wonder if that's like an infrastructure issue or a conflict of interest issue.
Yeah. So here's the thing. HBO needs to get on these comments and answer and respond to these consumers. You can't just put an app up in the App Store and let the comments fly and not respond. You're putting content out there. You know, as a provider, you're responsible for listening to those comments and responding. You know, and I don't think a lot of people think about that, but these are reviews of your brand. You know, you should get on there and respond, I think.
A lot of people, you know, tend to respond quickly these days, and I guess some people would argue that if you don't put your story out there, then you're going to let other people control the narrative, so it there's no reason not to at least put something out there, you know, from yourself.
Tell me what you think about this. You work at a corporation. They launch
an app. This is hypothetical.
Hypothetical. You work at a corporation. They launch an app. And they encourage people to go on and leave positive comments. Maybe they don't encourage people. Maybe people just do. But let's say they encourage people to go and write positive apps. So sort of flood the rating, you know, to give it a boost. Because nobody likes to see something with like one or two ratings. You know, you want to see it with like 20, 30, eventually into the thousands. What do you think about that? Do you think people should disclose that they work for the company when they're commenting? Mm. I work for X company and I love this app. I helped develop it, XYZ. Or is it okay that they're just like, great app, love it, awesome, super?
You know, I wonder about the insiders and the conflicts of interest about the reviews there, because the problem is it's sort of a closed loop. There's not a lot of independent discovery of apps online as much as there is probably people finding them through the App Store. And I could be wrong, but between top in categories, featured items, genius recommendations, I think a lot of people find apps in the App Store, right? So you're only allowing that channel, which is, it does seem corruptible because there's a hive of positive reviews anytime anything comes out. And then maybe people come in later with other views, and I don't know what else to say other than I think at least you've identified the issue and you're aware of it. I think you've got to read the content of the review, because if the review is substantially right, even if it's written by an insider, it might still be useful. Like, I think if people can marshal fair arguments in the product's favor, you know, maybe their status isn't as important. If it's an emotional outpouring, though, this is a great app. I think at the end of the, if you're looking at it, you might have to just discount almost all those logically, because the emotional, insubstantial review, while it might be helpful, it might actually be deceptive.
Yeah, I know of several companies that do that, and I don't agree with it. I think that you should, if you want to review it as a consumer that works for the company, I think you should disclose that. You can be proud of your product and you can like it and think it's great and talk about features, but I just don't think it's right. And, you know, coming from
certain companies where I know the people's names, you know, I know that they're doing that. And I just think it's not a good idea. I think it's unethical.
Well, if they keep it up, we might have to name names.
Yeah. DanielJMcKeown.com. Thank you.